Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Unlimited Parenting, a podcast where we discuss what it's like having children with disabilities or special healthcare needs. Today, it is just me, Allison, and we are going to be diving into the world of positive behavioral interventions and supports. You may have also heard this referred to as PBIS. Everyone loves another acronym. So PBIS, Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports. If you're a parent, educator, or someone working in schools, you've definitely heard of this, but you may not be intimately aware of the details. What is it? How is it being used? Is it just for children with behaviors? Is it for all children? Tell me more. Today, we're going to cover the basics of PBIS and then take a really deep dive into Tier 1 interventions. There are three tiers, and yes, we'll talk more about that. Tier 1 interventions are the foundation of creating a positive school climate, so not just for kids with behaviors. Let's start with the basics. PBIS, again, standing for Positive Behavioral Intervention Supports, more than just a program, it's a framework for schools. It can help schools be proactive rather than reactive when approaching any kinds of behaviors. Schools implementing PBIS consistently see a decline in problem behaviors, which lead to, as you can imagine, fewer suspensions, office referrals, and disciplinary actions. But because I'm a sucker for research, let's talk about some more studies that we can keep in mind when we dive into PBIS. In 2010, Bradshaw and colleagues conducted a meta-analysis of PBIS across 27 schools. They found that PBIS significantly reduces office discipline referrals and increases instructional time. In 2012, Horner found that schools implementing PBIS experienced 50 to 60% fewer disciplinary incidents. In 2014, McIntosh found that students with disabilities in PBIS schools have fewer behavioral challenges and higher engagement in learning. So we all know now that PBIS is an evidence-based method. Let's take a closer look at three key principles that PBIS is built on. The first is prevention. Instead of waiting for problem behaviors to arise, PBIS is focusing on teaching and reinforcing positive behaviors right up front. PBIS is also data-driven decision-making. Schools use behavioral data to identify patterns and adjust interventions as needed. PBIS is also an MTSS. MTSS stands for Multi-Tiered Systems of Support. So those are those levels that we were mentioning earlier. And PBIS operates on three levels. Tier 1, which we'll be covering today, universal supports for all students. Tier 2, which we'll cover in the next episode, targeted interventions for some students. And Tier 3, which will round out our PBIS series, intensive individualized interventions for a few students. So if you think of PBIS like a triangle, the bottom part of the triangle is the widest, and it's the foundation. That represents Tier 1 of PBIS. PBIS Tier 1 is all students. It's the foundation that all other tiers build from. So if you have a Tier 2 student, they're also receiving Tier 1 supports, the foundation of the triangle, plus Tier 2 supports. Tier 2 makes up the middle of that triangle, which is slightly narrower, but more targeted. And then the capstone of the triangle, the top, which you'll notice is the least wide, meaning it is representing the least amount of students, is those intensive individualized interventions for a few students. So top of the triangle, Tier 3, a few students. Middle of the triangle, Tier 2, some students. and the bottom of the triangle, the foundation of PBIS, Tier 1. So now let's get into a Tier 1 deep dive. Tier 1 again, interventions, universal strategies used to support every student in school. These aren't just for kids who struggle with behavior. They're for everyone, because PBIS, at its core, takes a proactive approach. A positive environment is going to benefit the whole school community. Here are the key components of PBIS Tier 1. Number one, set clear expectations. Schools that implement PBIS create 3 to 5 very simple, positively stated behavioral expectations. And these are what you can classically think of as school rules. Sometimes you'll walk into a school and these are often posted on a poster board, written on the smart board, written on the whiteboard. Every student will be able to tell you what these rules are. In some schools, I have seen them artfully drawn in the hallways. Kids can often recite them rote from memory. There are things like be safe, be respectful, be responsible, show kindness, work hard. So you may hear kids come home and say things like walking feet on the stairs, or bubbles and wings, or quiet voices in the hallway. These are those basic level Tier 1 interventions that apply to all students and set a proactive groundwork. These expectations are taught explicitly in different settings: classrooms, hallways, lunchrooms, recess, even the bus. Instead of assuming that kids just know how to behave or that they've all been brought up the same way, schools teach it like they would teach any academic subject. Because every family is different. Every child had a different situation growing up. No school is ever going to assume that a student knows how to do anything. We're going to come in proactively and teach the behaviors that we want to see, which will kind of be a theme throughout this series, is that when you want to change a behavior, when you want to ensure that a behavior is replicated, generalized across multiple situations, the first thing you're going to do is teach it. Even if you assume that most of the students know to be kind or work hard or be respectful, you're still going to teach, reinforce, model that behavior to ensure that you've laid that foundation first. So number two, teach and reinforce that positive behavior. Once those expectations are set, they're on the whiteboard, they're on the smart board, they're in the hallway, kids can say, at Apple Elementary School, I work hard, show up, and be kind. Staff model and practice them with students. Let's say, for example, a school has the expectation to be respectful. Teachers, educators, staff might show students what respectful looks like by eyes on speaker, body still. They might reinforce behavior with praise or small rewards. So for example, Everly, I noticed that you are sitting patiently waiting for your turn to read your sentence. High five. Or, hey class, can we do snaps for Everly? This is also another good way to call students in by highlighting that behavior that you want to see. Now they have a role model. So-and-so is being a great listener. Let's all look at this person and see what they're doing so we can emulate it. Also, give specific feedback. Even if you're not about to praise, simply saying, I love how you're waiting for your turn to speak. That's being so respectful. This approach shifts the focus from catching bad behavior to reinforcing good behavior. And that's going to be another theme. Instead of no running in the halls, we're going to flip that language to walking feet in the halls, please. We're always going to tell what we want to see happen and not what we don't want to see happen, which I can say from personal experience is a very hard rewiring of your brain. It was very difficult for me to flip that script. But I can also say that once you get in the hang of it, it becomes more natural and much easier. Number three, acknowledge and reward positive behavior. Many, many schools who implement PBIS also have recognition systems such as verbal praise, token systems. So a token economy is earning points, tickets, stickers, anything like that for positive behavior. Or school-wide incentives like Pi Day. So for example, if a student is able to get a certain amount of tokens, they may be able to pie a teacher in the face or throw a pie at the wall, something crazy, something outlandish that kids aren't typically quote unquote allowed to do, and give them the ability to earn that. Or other privileges like something more traditional like PJ days or bring a stuffy to school or other small prizes. They don't have to be elaborate or expensive. The key here is consistency and making kids feel valued. And number four, respond to behavior with support, not punishment. Tier one does not mean that kids will not misbehave, because they will. They're learning. But what tier one does mean is that the response is inherently different. Instead of punishments, PBIS uses redirecting and reteaching. Another example, instead of saying, "Oh, Everly, you are being so disrespectful, go to the office and talk to the principal," a PBIS response might be like, "Let's take a break. I noticed you're struggling to wait your turn. We're going to practice that together." This keeps students engaged and learning rather than pushing them out of the classroom, missing instructional time, potentially making them feel embarrassed. Give them the opportunity to be pulled back in. Bring them back in. Number five, it really takes a team. This isn't just at school. This is family and community involvement. And that's where we get generalization of skills. When kids have the opportunity to practice it in multiple settings, with multiple people, on different days, it works best when families get involved. So what can schools do to help with that? Share behavior expectations with parents. Give parents strategies for reinforcing positive behavior at home. Ideally, the reinforcers that are happening at home are also happening at school, and vice versa. Celebrate students' successes together. A team that is communicating and getting that family engagement is going to be the best team for the student. So maybe the teacher messages, "Everly got 9 out of 10 right on her spelling. We are so proud of her. She worked so hard." Everly gets off the bus, comes home from school, and her parents say, "Oh my gosh, 9 out of 10 on your spelling test. We were all so excited for you. You must be feeling so proud of yourself." That joint parents and teachers as a team is one of the key and critical pieces of Tier 1 foundations. When kids see consistency between school and between home, behaviors improve faster. Let's take a really deep dive into some other PBIS strategies that schools could use that would be low lift for parents to also implement at home. So this takes a more detailed look at behaviors. And to implement some of these strategies, we have to first ask ourselves, What is this behavior that this child is doing? What are they trying to communicate? What is the unmet need? So typically, for all behaviors, there's four different functions that you can generally classify a behavior into. And you can remember that with the acronym SEAT. S is in Sam, E is in Echo, A is in Alpha, T is in Tom. Sensory, escape, attention, and tangibles. So for sensory, it's providing some kind of preferred experience. This behavior feels good. It might happen when a kid is alone or if they're anxious. Escape is removing undesired activities or interactions. So this is when a kid maybe is getting up and just walking away. It might happen when the task is too hard, or when the task is too easy, or they're bored, or something scary is happening. Attention. This is providing access to people or interactions for the child. Usually attention happens when they want social interaction. And tangibles. So this, I always think of as access to a tablet. What it does for a child is providing preferred items or activities. Maybe they want a car. Maybe they want that food. Maybe they want that tablet. And it's going to happen when they want that preferred activity or item. So keep those in mind, because depending on what the behavior is trying to communicate, you can then choose one of the following strategies. Number one, planned ignoring. Ignore behaviors when the motivation is attention. So for example, you're on the phone and your daughter was peacefully playing by herself until she heard you giving your attention to someone else while you were on the phone. And that's when she's decided she needs you for food or a drink of water, or she just has to tell you this story. So maybe that's when you implement some planned ignoring. Or you could simply say, I would love to talk to you as soon as I'm off the phone. If this is something that occurs frequently, you may even take a PBIS proactive approach by saying, hey, I'm about to get on the phone. It's going to take maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And then when I'm done, we're going to play a game together. Or, hey, I'm about to get on the phone. It's been a while since you've had a snack. Can I get you anything? Because it's going to be about 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'm going to come back and check in on you. Number two, physical proximity. So a teacher might use proximity to communicate awareness. So if that student is just fidgety, they have got to ask a question. They are just vibrating because they cannot wait a second longer. You might stand close to let them know that you're not going to interrupt or stop what you're saying to assist them, but you know that they have a need and you're going to meet it as soon as you're done doing what you were doing. Another one is direct eye contact. Maybe you give the quote unquote teacher look to get attention and non-verbally prompt a student. Maybe you have a signal or a verbal cue. So for example, if a child needs to use the restroom, maybe they do the American Sign Language for the restroom, or they hold up a hand, or you can hold up a hand to let a student know in a nonverbal way, it's time for you to try to get up to go to the restroom if they're on a specific schedule. Acknowledge others' behavior. So this is one that we had an example of earlier. Oh, I noticed that you're sitting so patiently and so quietly while you wait for your turn to read. So just acknowledging that specific behavior may encourage others to exemplify that behavior as well. Number six, redirect. Restate the desired behavior as outlined in your classroom rules or schoolroom rules. Number seven, support routines. Install a routine to prevent problem behavior. So again, this is a tier one intervention. You have your classroom rules. You have a classroom schedule. And so when someone says, what time are we doing art today? What time are we going out for first play? You can refer them to the schedule. And that is also frequently an accommodation that is made for students with 504s or IEPs. For example, they have a visual schedule on their desk in front of them. They know what comes next. Number 8, reteach. Teach, teach, and reteach. State and demonstrate the expected behavior. And then once you've said it, once you've taught it, have that student then demonstrate or restate that expected behavior, and then you provide the feedback to them. Number 9, shaping. Acknowledge approximations of your desired behavior while simultaneously ignoring the undesired behavior. So if you've asked the student to stay quiet and sit down, but they've only managed to sit down and not stay quiet, ignore the part that they're not doing in this situation and say, I've noticed that you're sitting so engaged and you are so good at sitting right now. Thank you so much. That may just get them to circumvent the behavior altogether or get them to acknowledge that there was another portion of it. Number 10, specific and contingent error correction. So specific directions that alert the student to stop the undesired behavior and then engage in the specific behavior. Number 11, provide choice. Any time you can give choice, you're going to get more buy-in. So even if it's as simple as, would you like to read page 1 or page 2? Or do you want to take 2 non-preferred activities? But allow them the choice, if available, which one they do first. Did you want to read a page first, or do you want to do your handwriting? While both are activities that they don't want to do, giving them the agency to choose between which one they start with may be the only thing that they need to maintain positive behaviors throughout their unpreferred activities. And number 12, talk with the student. Have a conference. Describe the problem, teach the alternative behavior, tell why the alternative behavior is important, practice and provide that feedback, whether that looks like a daily check-in or several times throughout the day. So why does Tier 1 PBIS matter? Schools that use PBIS see major improvements, including fewer behavioral referrals, a more positive school climate, better academic outcomes because those students are spending more time learning and less time with the school social worker or in the principal's office or outside in the hall. It also increases student engagement and self-regulation. When all students get the support they need from the start, we then reduce the need for more intense interventions later. So that's a wrap on today's episode. We've covered the basics of PBIS, the importance of Tier 1 interventions, how setting clear expectations, reinforcing behavior, and involving families builds that positive school culture. If you're a parent, ask your child's school about their specific PBIS system. If you're an educator, think about one small change that you can make this week to reinforce positive behavior. Thanks again for tuning in today. If you're wondering, where can I learn more while you wait for the next in the series, Demystifying PBIS Tier 2, the Idaho Training Clearinghouse has a parent section on their website where you can find 30 resources just on behavior. We'll have a link to that in the description if you want to learn more. Thank you so much, everyone out there, for listening in. And know that if you are in Idaho or planning on moving to Idaho and have questions on systems or services for children with disabilities, please consider reaching out to us on our website at IPULIdaho, that's IPULIdaho.org, or by calling us at 208-342-5884. Be sure to tune in next time. Until then, this has been Unlimited Parenting.
Thanks for listening.